Now, back to Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
.706 on Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon. So we confirmed Johnny Ann Hansen is the CEO of Council of Industry.
That's correct.
So well, what do you think? We could give you a promotion here today since Harold's not.
Let's go. We can get away with a lot for the next couple of weeks.
There we go.
I think the girls woke up to an email yesterday that said, okay, there's a new sheriff in town. Here's what we need to get done in the next 2 weeks.
Ah, okay.
Mostly good stuff.
Okay. So I mentioned off air, but I'll mention it on air again, is that on Friday, Dr. Jonah Schenker is going to call in with me.
Excellent.
From Ulster BOCES. And then, of course, I'll make arrangements with him to go up and tour the new facility in advance. Find out where we're going to be set up for our broadcast on Friday, October 3rd. We'll be there for the full 3 hours, I trust, from 6 a.m. until 9 a.m.
Absolutely.
Tony Marmo was in yesterday. We were talking about this. He had toured the facility.
Yeah. And Harold, I think, was on that tour, too.
140,000 square feet.
It's innovative. I mean, honestly, it doesn't look or feel like you're expecting, except for if you're Jonah, that it's exactly what you were expecting. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of transferable nature within the space itself. A lot of forethought into this is how it should be right now, but we don't know how it should be, you know, in a year or so.
Right.
So what can be moved? How can we host people? How can we think bigger than just, you know, desks and classrooms facing, a lecture?
So, Johnny, when we go around the region, and I can be very excited about the progress that we've made over the last, let's say, 20 years. When I think back, I mean, we've done a couple of broadcasts from Pine Bush with all the work that they've done over there. And can't say enough about Allendale Machinery and Gene Haas Foundation.
I mean, honestly, they are at every turn.
Yes.
Even, you know, you'll see the same thing when we go there on the 3rd.
Yes. And we have, I mean, the work that the Ulster BOCES up on Port Ewan in 9W and Port Ewan has done over the years that we've been to a number of times. The Dutchess Community College, the mechatronics lab down the road here, the aviation program that they have.
Yeah.
The fact that a number of our schools are re-emphasizing the trades and industrial arts programs, hosting trades fairs, I guess I would call
it. Tours, trades fairs, career exploration days.
Yeah.
Partnerships, clubs.
So put all these things together.
Yeah.
Put them all together.
Yeah.
And, you know, from our high schools through our regional BOCES facilities, and we've got the, Westchester Putnam BOCES, we've got the Ulster Orange.
Yep.
We've got our community colleges.
Yeah, there's some stuff going on in Rockland County.
Rockland County, SUNY New Paltz, the School of Science and Engineering, and the playing together of the different schools on the SUNY campus.
Yeah.
Are you still doing adjunct instructing?
You know what? Not this semester, but I did last semester.
Okay.
I actually just, with my new promotion, I just decided this semester I wasn't going to do it, but I think I'm on the agenda for the spring.
And to teach what?
So, human resources.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I know. It's actually kind of, I used to teach the leadership class too, and that's really fun because, you know, that topic in itself, you could just do, you know, semester after semester. And the HR is good too, because I think no matter what a student decides to do, they're going to interface in some capacity. So it's real world stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some one-on-one things in FMLA and things that you need to know or that you should know how to Google if you need to know.
Right.
But whether or not you're going to be applying for jobs or you're going to be employing people, you're going to have to interface with this at some point. So I Harold knows this, but I joke a little bit about my evolution. The first week is great. I'm so excited. I meet all these people. We've got all this energy. And then, you know, you're grading papers and you're reading things and you're creating things. And you're just, it's a bit of a slog, just like a student.
Sure.
They're slogging. I'm slogging. But by the end of the semester, you get that feedback that just says, oh, I'm looking for this internship. And I did this on that. And then you get the emails, you know, all through the summer of people who got the jobs that just, you know, they're applying for a study abroad and they'd like a letter of recommendation, or they're asking me 5 years later, I get messages from students. I don't know if you remember me, but can we meet for coffee?
Sure.
Because I'm negotiating this job and I'm not sure what to do. I just had a student just literally a week ago who said I had to report something. I had to report something inappropriate at my job, and I thought about you, and I just wanted to reach out. And I was, you know, it was a minor thing, but she did the right thing.
Well, it's a big deal.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not glamorous in any means, particularly when you're in it. But when you look back on the time that you did it, you're just like, you know what, those, and yeah, I could tie this to manufacturing in the sense that, you know, whenever you talk to a room of 25 people, you're not going to get 25 people to hear what you're saying. It just isn't going to work that way.
No.
And you can spend a lot of your time thinking how frustrating it is that 15 of these people aren't listening, or 10, or whatever the number is. But when you look back in the aggregate and you're like, man, you know, if five of them listen every semester twice a year for 15 years, that's a good number of students. It's a good number of people who kind of check back in and say, hey, I remember that thing you said. And then that feels good. And I think the same thing happens with the students that we're trying to engage into mm-hmm. manufacturing mm-hmm. and trying to just expose them to these things. They're not going to remember everything, but if they remember a little bit of it, or if it clicks, you know, I mean, you've heard the famous Frank Fallotton story, just the, you know, random kid walking on a tour and his eyes just lit up 12 times the size and said, whoa, that machine is so cool. And now he's been working there for years. And, you know, you never know what's going to click.
So a couple of things to your point. Here over the years, I can be a broken record. I've repeated the same things over and over and over again.
You have to, though.
But you have to.
Yeah.
Because what do they say? It takes at least six times to sink in.
Yeah. And that's if all the odds are in your favor.
Exactly. But the other point is that going back, I think this was like 2010, 11, 12, when I was still on the board over at the School of Business, and I was co-instructing on their business integrity course.
Okay.
And what you said a minute ago reminded me of this. One in particular, at the end of the course, a young man wrote an email to me and to Stu Brody, who was, you know, the attorney who was also teaching this with me. And he said, you changed my life. Mm. He said, I came here with – this is the most important course I've taken.
Wow.
The whole time I've been here, and you changed my life. I came here with a chip on my shoulder about how things worked, and with looking at – you know, the tools of ethics and integrity and judging the situations and, you know, making sure you really had the information.
Yeah.
It was life-changing for him.
Wow. Wow, that's great. And that's also an interesting self-awareness to say, I had a chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people who walk around with those chips are so self-aware to mention it.
No.
But that's really good. You never know. And that's, like, I think about being on the receiving end of information, like the mentorships that were very, very short mm-hmm. in time, but had such an impact on me. Mm-hmm. I was talking with Emma yesterday, and we talked a little bit about, you know, we met this person, and through meeting that person, we thought, I might want to tweak my perception a little bit,
mm-hmm.
right? Or that person made me see the world a little bit differently. And that happens every day.
We had a situation in that class. Explosive is the word that comes to mind. And Stu invited, it was actually the wife of one of his co-workers in the law firm.
Oh, okay.
And she worked for a major pharmaceutical company.
Okay.
And the case study had to do with the falsification of the research work that got the approval on this. This is a true story.
Wow.
This is not
fiction. I'm surprised there's not some NDAs around that.
And the... And she was justifying it in front of the class.
Oh, interesting.
And Stu blew up and attacked her.
Oh, no.
She wound up grabbing her coat.
Oh, no.
Storming out of the room. This is all happening in front of the students.
I was just going to say, that's like adjunct fear number one. Oh, just like some sort of awful,
they were screaming at each other in the room. She grabbed her coat and purse and stormed out of the room, and he tore off after her. He's like, oh, my God, this is my wife of my coworker.
Oh, no.
And
so it was him kind of, he had invited her, and then also...
Yeah, they got into a direct conflict. Some
healthy discourse.
So now I'm standing there with with the students just like looking dumbfounded. Let me come back to this because this is really real things that happen.
Absolutely.
And you've got to be able to learn from them. Right now it's 7:16 on Hudson Valley Focus Live. Johnny Ann Hansen, CEO of Council of Industry, in studio. Let's hear from the Zolls with the sports report and pick up the conversation here in a minute.
It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
/7:21 on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon, live and local. Johnny Ann Hansen, Council of Industry, in studio. So just to sum up that story, it's really important because what happened there in the classroom, I mean, this was really confrontational.
Yeah.
They stormed out of the room. I'm left with 26 students with, shocked look on their face. And I had to turn that around and say, what you just saw, this was not theater. What you just saw, this may in fact happen in a boardroom anywhere.
Right.
Understand that. And, take this as a learning opportunity. And we discussed what they had seen.
Yeah.
Priceless.
Yeah.
So Stu comes walking back into the room about 10 or 15 minutes later.
So he continued that conversation in the parking lot.
Or down the hall or somewhere. And so I didn't let it go. I said, what happened? The students chastised him for handling the situation completely wrong.
Okay, interesting. Well, that's an interesting thing that they even had it to say, like, maybe this wasn't the time or place. You were probably not going to convince her of this. She was a guest in your classroom, and you could disagree, but aggressiveness of disagreeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was very, very, very meaningful in the end because they...
Did he receive that?
Yes.
Okay.
He acknowledged that. Yeah, I
kind of went off the rails a little
bit. Yeah, I didn't handle this very well, did I?
Oh, yeah, I think the importance of figuring out conflict is probably, on all levels, but even on our level, it's important and it's overlooked and maybe overrated. I heard something recently, so I'm not pro conflict, but I'm not necessarily afraid of conflict. I think conflict for no reason. I'm not out looking for conflict, but my fundamental belief is that if you and I are in conflict and I don't talk to you about it or I don't try and resolve it, I am still in conflict. Like, this is still happening in my body.
And Robbie, this is actually...
You look like a conflict guy.
Yeah. But this is actually an important conversation that relates to where we were an hour ago.
Well, I'm not... Okay, so what I would say is confrontational.
Right.
I am forced to be confrontational since my friends sometimes are not.
Right. And okay, so of all the non-confrontational people, you have to be the more... or most confrontational in order for things to get from point A to point B.
Yeah, because... Yeah.
I think that too.
Yeah, because, sometimes you can, kind of to your point, if you don't do anything, you still have a conflict. You still have a problem.
Absolutely.
And so if you don't address it, you still have a problem.
Agreed.
And sometimes with confrontation, it's going to be very, productive, positive. I come to you, it's like, hey, I don't like how you said this. Can you please... go about it a different way, or sometimes like, I don't like, really start screaming at each other, then it just worsens. And sometimes when someone is confrontational, the person who's being confronted feels like they're being attacked, even though they're not.
And then the whole thing escalates. No, I agree. Yeah. I also am a believer in just tact and humanity. Like, I might have upset you. It was not my intention to upset you, but that doesn't mean I didn't upset you. And vice versa. Like, you may have upset me. It might not have been your intention, but it doesn't mean that you didn't upset me.
Yeah.
I heard something recently that said that there's only a few triggers that, that make us confrontational. And one of them, and the, if you go through it, it gets to the root. And is it, it's like a humiliation or shame or embarrassment. So like if you feel like possibly someone wants you to look stupid, feel stupid, you know, whatever that is, that will trigger you to be confrontational. Another thing is, for lack of a better word, justice or injustice. And I find that kind of, this is what made me think about it, Tom, is I find that sometimes I am like, but that is wrong. Like, I feel like I have to say something because it's wrong. And then, you know, I find myself, you know, going in on that. And I mostly, you know, those are the things that stood out to me. But my approach to conflict is, you know, I actually said this to Harold. When we've been working together for over 8 years, right? And Harold is the most get alongable guy ever. I mean, honestly, his kindergarten teacher mom like nailed it. Okay, so he's the nicest, easiest person to be around. But also, you know, things are going to happen.
Sure.
So in the first time, probably 3 or 4 months in, I had just this sinking feeling that we were just not on the same page. And I went in and I just said, it is my intention to work with you forever and ever and ever and ever. Like, that is my goal, because I really like it here and I like the work that you're doing and I like the work that I'm doing. But I'm curious that when things go a little askew, how would you like me to approach you in terms of conflict? Because I know how I like to talk about things, but I know you have a different approach. And I think we just sort of set it off on that tone. I'm here. I'm in. I'm ride or die. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not mad. I'm not going to flip a switch. But I also want to tell you that, like, that comment was weird, or I think we're just seeing this differently. And we make a joke about our podcast that we literally like argued about it for 18 months before it went anywhere. Because right. Every time podcast was a 4-letter word for us for a period of time, because I would say it and he would just get defensive, and then he would say it and I would get defensive. But ultimately, what I think we're trying to model for our team is that you're allowed to kind of have those feelings and then just be like, okay, so you want to grab lunch? Like, you know, you want to ride with me? And you can make up through that.
Yeah,
I see what the problem is. Podcast is a 7-letter word.
I know. And that, you should have just told him that right out the gate. Like, why are you reacting like this? Yeah. It's true.
I always feel that, like, when it comes to two people, it's impossible to feel okay 100% all the time. It's impossible. And something's going to happen where it's like, I don't like what's going on here. And you should talk about talking. It's very, like, you don't think about it much, but you have to talk about, like, that was very important, especially in, like, the workplace, too. That's a very touchy subject on how to interact with each other, especially when there's, like, a conflict and the problem that's happening. How do you talk about it in the most appropriate way?
I want to get to a resolution. Right. I want to be okay. I'm not trying to be the person who worked with you for 15 years and just goes home and complains about it.
Right. So what I found interesting, what you're saying, John Ann, is it reminded me of when I was also over at New Pulse, whether it was in that business integrity course or when I would go back over to the School of Engineering with their engineering management course every semester and teach the class on integrity there for that management thing, and try to convey to the students, you're going to be going out into the workforce.
Yeah.
And one of the things in the interview process, if it's not brought up, ask. Mm-hmm. If I find myself in something that's challenging the integrity of what I'm supposed to be doing, what kind of process do you have in your company to handle that?
Absolutely.
Similar to what you were just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're all going to be faced with some interesting challenges. And if we're lucky, we are. If we're lucky, we get to solve problems and face uncertainty, and, you know, maybe not to the level that we are currently, but that's still a thing.
Sure.
So what are you going to do when that happens? It's inevitable that something is going to not go your way.
So we're going to go to a break here in a second, but you just queued this up about what's happening in the macro world of tariffs.
Yeah.
And how it impacts our U.S. economy. You're members of the Council of Industry. And what I see is we don't even have an honest discussion going on, you know, nationally about how important this really is.
Yeah. I think to Robbie's point is no one's, you know, really talking about the talking. There's just a lot of talking. My father-in-law used to say, when all is said and done, there's a lot more said than actually done.
Yes.
So
Absolutely so. It is 7:30 on Hudson Valley Focus Live. John A.N. Hansen, we've decided, is the CEO of the Council of Industry. So we'll take a quick break. Maybe we'll give her a promotion by the time we come back. Back in a minute on The Beacon.
Live, local, and unafraid, this is Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
7:34 on Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon. Looks like some nice sunshine out there today.
Yeah, coming over the fog.
Was it foggy on the bridge?
It was very foggy.
I said earlier that I had some patchy fog as I came down the Taconic early this morning, but you know, other places are perfectly clear.
Yeah, it's definitely patchy, but it's also kind of pretty. You know, yes. Just kind of picturesque on that ride in.
So, talking about the fact that we, you know, don't have real conversations, and a couple of things come to mind. I mentioned before going out to the break about the tariff situation. Yeah. Well, that's important. And then I was thinking back, though, that conflict last week when RFK Jr. was before Congress, and there's a crisis. There's a healthcare crisis in this country, and those legislators were not even acknowledging it. Which is
it's an interesting thing. If you're not asking the right questions, you're not getting the right answers. You're not talking about the right topics. It's, you know, feels a bit theatrical.
It was political theater. Yeah. You know, they were grandstanding. Yeah. And but this back to the tariff situation. This is absolutely critical for our national security. This is something that Harold and I have spoken about for two decades and more, that we had in this particular instance, you know, China subsidizing their manufacturers to undercut our American manufacturers to attempt to bankrupt them, which we lost a number of manufacturers because of it. Fortunately, the innovation, industry, hard work, entrepreneurship that's embedded in who your members are. Yeah.
Problem solving.
Fighting their way through and keeping their businesses going.
Yeah. And I mean, I would add maybe to that in doing that, they had to figure out how to do business in that environment.
Yes.
And, you know, some of that was, you know, to globalization. Some of that was to change up the way and where they did their business. And so I think your point that the conversation isn't about the root cause and the need and the long-term strategy. You know, it's a little bit of distraction conversation.
Sure.
And it's a little bit of finger pointing. I think I said this in the past, that there are some jobs that they're like, your entire job is to prove that it's someone else's fault. Like, that's it. It's never to come up with the, like, you know, Robbie and I are working on this project and you're like, all right, Robbie, I'm going to be honest. This didn't go the way I wanted it to go. But instead, you're just sitting there looking at the facts and saying, so Robbie, 100% this is your fault. Like, that's just all there is. So it's not a lot about figuring it out. And I don't think, I mean, I think we can have these conversations at a local level, but I don't think that there's an audience that really on either side wants to hear that, wants to just have a real conversation and talk real solutions and, you know, real talk. I just think that we're too far into this way of how people communicate, particularly at that level, that the it's not about that.
It's sad.
It's awful. And it puts these employers in the position to have to navigate the uncertainty and the turbulence and, you know, hope that they can make it through and ride the wave that they have no real control over. And everything that we're doing takes such a long time to shift on mostly all levels. So maybe a decision can be made like a light switch right now. It says, I'm going to do this, we're going to do this. But a company can't change that quickly. They can't say, okay, no problem, I'll just cancel that order and go somewhere else. That might be the only place in the world that is producing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take months to figure out how to restructure that.
Well, the analogy that I've used, Johnny Ann, is, you know, it takes years and years and years for a tree to grow.
Right.
And you can cut it down in a second with a chainsaw.
Absolutely.
And then, oh, gosh, we really needed that tree.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote something the other day, and I used a similar analogy. I forget where this was, but I was talking about the... you know, reestablishing the branches of our supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't call it the supply chain. No, yeah. I deleted.
Maybe the roots, even like just getting to the core of those things. But you're right. It takes years and years to build that tree, and a lot of manpower and cost.
Here's what I wrote: for our nation's future, think strategically, not politically. Everybody else has it's just political.
Yeah.
We need to think about the future of this nation. Reshoring our U.S. industrial production that was ignorantly, foolishly, and perhaps criminally gutted over the last 30 years because of NAFTA and China's WTO and most favored nation status will take time. An economy, here's the important part, an economy is organic, not mechanical. Mm-hmm. It's a living ecosystem, and regrowing the roots and branches of our severed supply lines mm-hmm. for materials and talent is a complex task.
Yeah.
The recently imposed tariffs are a critical part of the process needed to buy us time. It's all about our future national security, not cheap goods by way of Temu or Shein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's that part right there. The economy is organic, not mechanical. It's a living ecosystem, and regrowing the roots and branches of. I actually had supply chains, but that chain is
right
back is
to
mechanical.
That same thing. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Why I said supply lines for materials and talent, and that's absolutely where we are.
Yeah,
it will take. It's going to take...
it took generations to get here.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's
took
going
to
take
long
at least
time to
a
get
decade.
To this point. Yeah. And, you know, again, if you're trying to weigh out both sides of the expense of this project, right, there's the obvious, we need to do something, something needs to change. Then the other side to that is, you know, the speed at which we're changing may not be at the speed of which the roots can regrow. You know, and an individual company or companies of a smaller size may not have the ability to adapt that quickly or the bandwidth.
So in this, were the arguments where they took the administration to court now saying there's not a national, because Trump used
an emergency.
Emergency. It is an emergency. Mm-hmm. And I'll absolutely stand on that point because we have to transfer the institutional knowledge from the generation of workers, many of whom are at or near retirement
age.
Yeah. We don't have 3 or 5 years or 10 years to wait to make an easy transition.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, what is that? The same going back to a tree theme, right? The best time to have planted a tree is 20 years ago, but
exactly.
The second best time is now. And I think that that's true. And, you know, what kind of... you know, damage is happening in the meantime, that's to be determined.
And some of that would be irreversible.
Yeah.
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 So if I go back 16 years ago, 2009, when Harold and I met at Schatz Behring with six of your members, and you said you've been on board now for 8 years and creating an apprenticeship program.
Yeah.
That's why we've been way ahead of the curve.
I agree with that.
For a long
time. Yeah, because you've been trying to sound that bell. And back to our point about students, if you're talking to 25 students, the statistical likelihood that 25 students are hearing you. So it took a long time for people to hear. And, you know, these probably are drastic measures that have some good intentions and some way to deploy that is maybe necessary. I think you're also right that we're not necessarily saying the right words and articulating it well. That's just not the reality of what this is. But I think it's going to be... you know, the bell curve, right? There's going to be some companies that are, this is an excellent opportunity. I think we mentioned we're working on the content for our magazine, and we had a small round table with some manufacturing executives. And in that room, we had 5 people. One person walked in and just said, I see opportunities everywhere. One person walked in and said, I don't know if we're going to come out of this. You know, two people said it's impacting me, but not that bad. I've been able to pass it off to our customers and it's been okay. But it's different for everyone.
So, Robbie, what was the word puzzle I gave you a few weeks ago? Opportunity is nowhere, or opportunity is now here.
Yeah, right.
Same exact letters.
I get it. Okay, I get it. Yeah, I think it's hard. Here's what I was thinking when you were talking is we weren't at like 0 or 100 in January either, right? So it wasn't like everybody was like, okay, get your ducks in order. The world is changing. It was already a mess, right? The companies were already struggling to figure out things because of past disruptions.
Oh, yes.
So they were, you know, still, for lack of a better word, coming out of COVID, coming through the tax regulations, coming through the compliance obligations. So they're already, you know, depleted in terms of, not everybody. Some people are, you know, fat and happy, and we're fine with that too. But there are some companies that were just straining to keep up with the compliance requirements, with the regulation environments, with the changes that were coming there. And you kind of come in, you're tired and you're exhausted, and you're like, okay, there's a new opportunity. Let's see where opportunities bring me, right, and how I can get there. And then, you know, if you're in that position and you get a little bit of a punch in the gut financially in the short term, and you can't take that might be hard. And the opposite is true.
Yeah. I mean, I was so many factors, and we'll take a break in 1 second, Johnny Ann. But I was thinking about the taxes that were set to expire.
Mm-hmm.
That
were absolutely
so meaningful.
Agreed.
For capital investment.
Agreed.
Necessary capital investment by your members.
Absolutely.
That would have
agreed.
Been devastating.
100%. And because of the other disruptions and things that are happening, and the news necessarily, you're less focused on that, right? That was huge. It's a huge win.
The public is not engaged in it. They don't know.
Right.
So,
or they're negatively engaged.
So earlier you were talking about something and you about your management. You said FLA. I assume you're talking about Family Leave
FMLA,
Act.
FMLA, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. Family Leave Act, one regulation that people have to deal with.
Sure.
Here. We have environmental regulations with OSHA and the EPA. Mm-hmm. We have labor law provisions.
Yeah.
You name it.
Right. And
environmental
then
provisions.
Depending on your industry, depending on your side, like there's so much. If you're thinking healthcare, and you know, if you're thinking food, if what there's a lot,
and
there should be, right? We're not.
I have no problem with that,
right?
But the fact is, when we then take through trade policy and put our American workers in competition with nations that don't have those regulations, we spent $4 trillion to clean up our air and water,
100%,
and we gave away a bunch of that in the 1990s because those trade agreements did not have environmental restrictions,
100%. Yeah.
So, Johnny Ann Hansen, the Council of Industry, quick break, and then back in a minute on Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon.
He's the voice of the valley. Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
:49 on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon. Johnny Ann Hansen, CEO of Council of Industry. In November's going to be here. We talked about October 3rd being manufacturing broadcast, but then November's going to be here.
Yep, we have a handful of events in addition to the iPark 87 live radio show. They're also doing their ribbon cutting later that day, and they've got a lot of dignitaries coming. It's a big deal. But we have a couple of tours in Poughkeepsie, I think maybe in Orange County, just a handful of things going on around the region, which is exciting. And then you blink. Right. We just finished our golf outing. So then you literally blink and we get to the luncheon. And we did just secure our keynote speaker, Maribel Cruz Brown from NYPA, from the Power Authority.
Uh-huh.
And she's going to come and talk to us. She's the economic development arm. And she's going to talk a little bit about the how. You know, we know what's going on. We just talked a little bit about energy and the challenges that are happening there. But you know, how, and a little bit about their programs, like their New York Reconnect or Connect. What is it? I just lost the name of it. But that's going to be good. She's great. She's been there for over 20 years and a good partner for us. So that's exciting. We're looking forward to that. We're already not filling up, but we're starting to fill up for
can
that
I,
event.
Can I
yeah.
Come?
Yeah, please.
Oh, okay.
I'll let you talk, Tom. Okay. You asked.
So, no, it's always a great event, and you're going to be giving out your certificates to the people who've come through your courses, and it's such a great public recognition for those individuals working for your member companies who have put all the extra effort into moving along a career pathway, I guess I would say.
Yeah, they enjoy it. I mean, we have, I think it'll probably be close to 50 graduates this year, because our programs have been, knock on wood, moving forward. We're in the middle of a cohort now. We have a class tomorrow. That's moving along nicely. So that'll be good. We also have the member and associate member expo,
which is
one time a year that our members and expo and associate members get to share their work with everybody and make those kinds of connections. So that's really nice. Same location. And that's just an event we look forward to all year. It's crazy how quick time flies.
Well, I know I've said this many times before, but it's the collaboration that takes place with your members and your associate members is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. The integration is important. None of us could do this alone. And companies that join an association like ours know that.
Mm-hmm.
They know that the work that they're doing with our workforce program supports our programs, but it supports the whole ecosystem.
Right.
The work that we do with the community college, it supports the whole ecosystem and our associate members too.
I mean, and to your point, that's, you talk about the Business Expo that the folks from educational institutions will also be there in November.
Absolutely.
And networking and meeting, exchanging information.
Yeah, we usually partner with the Pathways students. They come and help with registration, and they get to be there as students to network, but also they get to help a little bit on a project. And it's a nice day where you get to see, 300 of your closest friends.
That's right. And it's,
November 21st.
When was the breakfast?
I feel like you could tell me when the breakfast was.
It was the end of April, I think it was.
It was the 25th.
April 25th?
Yeah.
Why do I even know
that? I know why you know that.
I know why I know that. That was the day of the NFL draft, day one.
Okay.
Man, there you go. Different
that
ways.
That makes total sense. So, that makes total sense. And here we are. So I think we're also working on scheduling that. So that'll be coming up in there. We've got a handful of things going on. And I mentioned our magazine content, mm-hmm. which is kind of exciting. So we have the article we mentioned from the manufacturing executives. We have an article on agentic AI. You talked a little off air about emergency preparedness.
Yes.
And we have an article about that for manufacturers. We have an article, Mission Ready. I think that might be something we should connect you with.
Mm-hmm.
Just a process in which manufacturers can make sure that they have the opportunity to maybe get in line and be prepared to get into the pipeline of defense if that's something they could do. And then our two featured articles, one was with Caribbean Food Delights. I think we talked about that a couple weeks ago. They make the Jamaican beef patties right here in the Hudson Valley, and the ones that you literally see at ShopRite today, and also TurboFill, and they're down in Mount Vernon, which was a really nice visit, because that they're a small to mid-sized company on a regular street that right near the river and right near the train station, but they are doing some really high-end advanced machines that are helping in biomedical and tech thing. So we have a lot of good stuff happening in our content world as well.
Well, and when you mentioned the defense, I was thinking about the Jack Nugent has been in with me twice already.
Yeah.
He's going to be joining us on that Friday, October 3rd for the Manufacturing Day broadcast from the buildsubmarines.com Maritime Industrial Base. So, these are things that are – these are really, really, really good things that are happening on so many levels It just doesn't get enough attention, I don't think, in the national media.
No, I mean, I think it's not salacious enough. Just good people doing hard work and innovating and trying to navigate challenges. Meh.
Good
I mean,
people
where's
doing,
the hook
good,
there,
good
Tom?
Good people doing hard work, It's,
yeah.
I mean, that's a very accurate statement, though.
Yeah. And that's kind of what our job is, right? That's kind of what we get to do.
With really good motives.
Yeah. And also, innovating in a way that our future selves will be thankful for.
Yeah. So the some of the things that you just touched on, Johnny, and the wait a minute, where am I here? I'm on the wrong week here. Hang on, bear with me for one quick second. So this is actually September is now designated as Self-Care Awareness Month.
Oh, okay. I was not aware.
Well, I know, but it kind of just fit within what you had just said.
I like it.
And it's also Emergency Preparedness Month.
Okay. And those two things, I guess, intersect in some way.
Yeah, they do. But you talked about your manufacturers, people, you know, being ready for the unexpected. And when, you know, Bill Beal, Dutchess County's Emergency Response Coordinator, popped in here a few minutes ago, that's why I wanted to mention that, because we're going to be doing probably next week doing shows about that preparedness, and congratulations to your daughter.
Yeah, absolutely. So she just finished a degree at UAlbany in emergency preparedness and got a job for the New York State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. It's a little bit of a tongue twister, but we're real happy. I mean,
it's really important to have that vision to look ahead and be proactive. How do we, protect our citizens, not always to be reactive.
Right. And I mean, it's interesting because when she first said that she was interested in this major, I thought, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Like, she came up with that on her own?
She did. They have a program at Albany. She went in as a globalization major because she had an interest in that. And ironically, Tom, weird timing for that too.
Yep.
And then she went to a little information session and she just came back first semester, changed her major in the middle of her freshman first semester. And she said, if I have to sit in classes and learn things, I want to learn things that are interesting and are relevant and applicable. And I can connect the dots on this. So, you know, some of her classes are just like terrorism and, you know, trafficking. And I would say, you know, when you're human, she's like, not human trafficking, it's all trafficking. And then she'd like list out a bunch of things. I'm like, okay, I get it. Things are being trafficked. But, you know, she has an authentic interest in wanting to do that. Well, and I'm happy for her to be on the preparedness side.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that especially if she has the innate ability. Yeah. I mean, I've spent 55 years in risk management, risk loss prevention, risk reduction.
Yeah.
And years earlier, you talked earlier about everybody in your office doing certain kind of testing.
Mm-hmm.
About 40 years ago, we were bringing on a new personnel screening company.
Okay.
And we all had to do the test to set all the baselines. Well, you know, mine came back. What was my ideal job? Risk management.
Oh, that's ironic.
Yeah.
Okay, good for you.
Yeah. And it's just something that I think you either see it or you don't.
Right. Right.
And so if your daughter has that innate ability and can really identify it to look into.
Yeah. And not be like thrown off by it.
No.
I think I might have shared this with you in the past. That, you know, one of the trainings that she went to was a school shooting training. And I was like, are we ready to change our major yet? And she was like, no, I have 16 pages of notes and questions to ask UAlbany. Like, I'm not sure that they're doing what they need to be doing. And I was like, okay.
That's a big deal.
That's fine.
It's important.
So she's just, you know, she doesn't necessarily want to be the person on the scene. She doesn't want to be a first responder, but she wants to be in the preparedness side to say, you know, is this police department prepared?
So that it doesn't happen.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's interesting.
Good for her.
It's good stories. And, you know, as a mom, very thankful that she's completed her degree and got the job.
Excellent. Looks like I thought we had a whole nother minute yet. No, we don't have a whole nother minute yet. Johnny Ann Hansen, thanks for spending time with me.
Yeah, I'll be back next week.
Sounds good. Listeners, refresh those beverages. Meet you back here in a minute on Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon.